Welcome to Dentists, Implants, and Worms, helping you navigate the world of dentistry one vodka soda at a time. As always, from day one, this episode is brought to you by Boyd's Wine and Spirits on Mount Rushmore Road in Rapid City, South Dakota. The finest selection of bourbon and wine for miles around with cold beer, a growler station, and rock bottom prices. Now, here are your co-hosts, Drs. Justin Moody and Randy Huska.
All right, welcome to another episode of Dentist Implants and Worms.
Goose Ablo.
Gusano.
Gusano.
Welcome to another episode of Dentist Implants and Gusano.
Who's Gusano?
Landers. It's a Mexican Spanish worm. You don't know your Spanish?
Apparently
it's,
not.
It's Spanish for worm.
No, I did not know that.
Gusano.
Gusano.
Yeah. Can you spell it?
G-U-S-A-N-O.
Can you say it in a sentence?
That Landers is a real fucking Gusano.
Tequila and Gusano.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah. Tequila worm. Worm tequila? Worm in the tequila.
Yeah, there's worm tequila.
Yeah.
Didn't know you could use it in that kind of sentence.
I know. Thank you again, Boyd's Wine and Spirits, for all the years of sponsorship for this podcast. The last one we taped may have ended that sponsorship, but all the better. So we are live again, Voices of Dentistry. We have a couple of people want to talk about this one dental school up in the Pacific Northwest. I'm shitty. Jeremy Martins.
Yeah.
You are a fourth year dental student at Oregon Health Science Center.
University.
If you got to ask for her name tag, I bet you get slapped.
I probably shut her down. And Dr. Chris Odlin is also joining us. Practicing dentist in Vancouver, Washington, just across the river from the old dental school. Yep. She drove me by it the other day.
Yeah.
Well, kind of.
Well, we went by the old dental school, but the new dental school is gorgeous.
Yeah.
You have a view of the river.
Yeah, and especially on the 12th floor in our ortho clinic, they have windows on either side, kind of like an L shape, so all the operatories just face right out the window.
You know, why do those losers always have, like, the nice views and stuff like that?
Who are you calling a loser?
Orthodontist.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I wasn't very particular on that. You know, they have the easy job, and they,
make all the money.
Yeah, they make all the money.
No overhead. I know. Yeah.
Terrible.
We could only aspire. Yeah. I didn't work that hard in school.
Yeah, neither did I. I was an overachiever, I think, at finishing last. So.
Are you going to be an orthodontist?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Oh.
Well, where are you from?
Originally from California, from Santa Rosa, California.
Ooh, Santa Rosa. Is that in Sonoma County?
It is in Sonoma County.
Yeah, that's
right. Do you
right.
like wine?
I love wine.
Oh.
Yeah. I love wine.
Nice so much work. To talk about.
Yeah, nice work. So you went. Where'd you go to undergrad?
I did my undergrad at a small school, actually, in Kansas. Atchison, Kansas.
I know where Atchison, Kansas
You
is.
Know where Atchison is?
I grew up in Nebraska.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I was going to say, I think you're the first person I talked to who actually knows where
Atchison
is.
I've been all over
is.
That damn state. So,
yeah, so I went
so
to...
So how do you... What the hell took you to Kansas?
Dude, that's a million-dollar question, because being from California, why the hell would I end up
in Kansas? You're like the only Californian in Kansas.
So there's kind of two reasons, kind of a primary and an underlying reason. It's a small private Catholic college that's out there, and I did some missionary work actually after high school. So I volunteered for 2 years in Georgia. So I lived in Sandy Springs, which is just near Atlanta, Georgia, for two
mm-hmm.
years.
Yeah.
Kind of got connected with some people there who had connections into Benedictine in Kansas.
Oh.
But then when I was deciding, I knew I wanted to be a dentist at that time, and I'm not very good at school. I just needed some extra help. And so knowing myself well enough after high school and taking some time to reflect on things, I realized that I kind of need to be put in an isolated environment to study and focus. And also being in that small school allowed me to have the mentorship and private tutoring and things like that, that it could help me be more competitive in my application. So
good
it was kind
you.
Of a necessary evil to try and just bunker down in the Midwest. The school, I think, had 1,700 students, and I was one of three in my biochemistry class, and I was the only biochemistry major in my class. So, there's a picture of me next to, the biochemistry students with, a number one, because I was the top biochemistry student, because I was the only one. So,
Is there still an end stop on the MARTA system for Sandy Springs?
Is there still an end stop?
Does the MARTA goes all the way up to Sandy Springs, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Last I was there, eight years ago. Yeah. So,
one of the lines on the MARTA, when you travel,
Peter
on
Bolden
something
might
like
know better.
That, it always puts the last stop as the line, and I may or may not have woke up in Sandy Springs on the MARTA and then had to ride it back the other direction.
Is the MARTA a train?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Metro the, it's or the, something. It's the Atlanta, Metro Atlanta Transit. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area, Atlanta. They have the BARTA, which is like the Bay Area or whatever. So
and
like,
then we have Max. Okay.
Yeah, so Atlanta's is MARTA. And
oh, okay.
Anyway, I
so, so how's dental school going then?
Dental school, yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to compare it to. It's my first time through, you know, thank God.
Well, that's good.
And
yeah,
it's my only school I've gone through, so I don't really have anything to compare that to. So it's unique, I think, pandemic or not. I think it's a unique experience.
Yep.
It's easy to say that you missed out on a lot because of the pandemic, cutting a lot of clinical hours. We already were not having a lot of clinical hours. But I think that's how dental school goes. I think that no matter how many clinical hours you have, no matter how many procedures you do, you're still in dental school.
Yep.
And like, yeah, we can get better, and those first few are probably really critical, especially when you have so much input and things like that. I have just come to the realization that it doesn't matter if you do 5 crowns, 10 crowns, 50 crowns, you're pretty much still a new grad, right, when you graduate.
Yep.
And, you know, although naturally you can say that some are better than others, I would think that most new graduates start on a level playing field, to be honest. And I don't think it's a matter of your clinical abilities in school that set you apart. I think there's a lot more to learn outside of the clinical abilities that set you apart. And the pandemic was, for me, a blessing in disguise because I had to realize that because I was cut so much from clinical and I had a lot more time to kind of reflect on that. And instead of throwing myself a pity party every time you had to assist someone instead of seeing your patients, spend extra time in the lab because you had to redo something that didn't make sense to anyone else. You know, you just had to redo work for the sake of redoing work. I don't know, help a first year take impressions because they were cutting your direct patient care. Like, there's so many different examples where things were cut and you had to fill in with just, like, meaningless, quote unquote, tasks that you had to do, and you were paying $500 a day to do them. So it's very easy to throw yourself a little pity party and just be like, oh, I'm paying so much to be here. I'm not doing any crown preps. I'm hardly even doing cleanings at this point, especially early on in the pandemic, you know, and our clinical experience was pushed back another 3 months because of it. So, cause I got in my third year in 2020. So that was right when it hit. And so we normally get in that summer. So then it got pushed back into the fall. So we got into clinic a little bit later as well. So because of that, that's actually how I got into podcasting. Was because I had that extra time. Dr. Richard Lowe actually spoke to our business and dentistry group, and Dr. Moody has spoke to the same group as well. And so that's kind of how I got affluent in podcasting, and then listened to a lot of advice, got to reach out to some people and got more advice, got some book recommendations, which was excellent advice, and started implementing anything that I heard of, anything that I can come across, and I feel like that has helped my experience more so than just the clinical. That's where I started to realize there's so much more to dentistry than clinical dentistry.
Excellent.
And in short, that's kind of what brought me here. And
that's awesome.
Being able to come here and meet everyone. Yeah.
And then what's the plan when you graduate?
Plan when I graduate is to work as an associate in private practice. I have very much like a start with the end in mind, and because I want to go into some sort of ownership, whether it's partial or full practice ownership, I want to be in private practice. So with that, I kind of felt like I was wanting to be an associate in a private practice and start there versus in a DSO, although I explored that option. Most of that just came about through location because DSOs have a lot more openings in places I just didn't want to live. You know, the three buckets I think you have to fill are kind of like, can you pay the bills? Can you make enough? Location, where do you want to live? And for a new grad, it's mentorship and experience. And so I felt like I can get that through an associateship in a private practice. I just had to look. And Dr. Justin Short had some advice for me about shadowing. And so just been trying to reach out to doctors and been able to shadow, and that's been tremendous too. Because again, while I can't work in clinical, doesn't mean I can't go out and meet doctors and see what they do and pick up tips and tricks and things like that. So again, that's just where I've been getting the experience now. So in a way, it's like been a blessing that I haven't had as much clinical experience because I've been able to open my eyes a lot more and not had my head down the whole time and just trying to get through it. So it's allowed me to think beyond dental school.
That's a great perspective. So do you think you're going to stay in the Portland area, or do you think you're going to go back to Santa Rosa?
I am. I will probably end up working in Camas, Washington with Dr. Brady Smith.
Oh,
do you know
yeah.
Dr.
My
Brady?
My parents live in Camas. Yep, and I know Dr. Brady.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
awesome.
I sat down with him a little while ago, and we talked about some stuff. So it'd be cool to get to start out in his practice and kind of see his workflow. And I know you all know each other pretty well, too. So it's kind of cool to be part of that community.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll be a good starting point for me.
Great.
In my career.
I mean, I know the hot topic right now is education and the expense of it, and that is hard. It's hard for even as a private practitioner to bring on associates to compete with that because DSOs just have a lot more leverage in coming in.
Yeah.
So it's fun when you get the opportunity. And
that was my biggest thing with talking with Dr. Brady is it's hard for a new grad to be competitive in the space of associateships, right? Because, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of training. There's a lot of gaps. You have no idea what you're getting, really. I mean, we have hardly any clinical experience, and you don't know what our other experiences are like either. I mean, only a resume can only say so much. Even a working interview as a new grad can only say so much, because what, you're going to analyze my fifth crown and critique the hell out of me for it or something? I don't know. It's a lot of pressure, and we're not a very good applicant on paper. And so when I sat down with Dr. Brady, I said, like, I know I can excel in this profession. I know I'm made for this profession, and I need someone who's willing to, like, buy in that with me. Like, I need someone who believes in me, basically, because a lot of my classmates are turning toward DSOs because they're the only ones that give them the time of day. And there's a lot of other reasons, but I think, honestly, it's because I've literally had DSOs text me personally. I haven't had any doctors text me personally, right? It's like, that's where the opportunity is. Those are the people reaching out. And those are the people willing to train you and speak to you, for crying out loud, you know? I mean, even shadowing before dental school, dentists in California would not let me shadow. I would go into an office. They wouldn't let me meet the doctor. Half of them wouldn't let me meet the doctor. They would say, oh, he'd call you or call him. And I was like, well, how am I supposed to get a hold of him just calling his office? And I was very saddened that I couldn't even meet the dentist in my own town by that. So I've really been trying to shadow more in places that allow me to shadow, because I'm starting to see, especially as I start to grow in my career, like, there's so much more to be gained there, and seeing how other people communicate and treatment plan and just go through the workflow. And it's kind of nice, because as a student, I'm like a sponge right now, and I'm just trying to absorb and integrate everything that I've been learning and apply it with the little opportunity that I have in dental school to apply it and see how it works out for me. And I think that that's also helped me enrich my experience in dental school, is by applying all these little concepts and things that I've learned has helped me really excel. I have some patients I try and drive away because I feel like it's not a very good value for them to come to the school. Patients that drive a long distance, for example, I'm like, it's not worth it. They're 3-hour appointments. You need like 3 of them to get through an exam. Like, you have to take a whole day off work for your dental appointment, like a whole day. And you have to spend the money you would save in gas. And I still have some saying, no, but I want to see you. I don't like my dentist over there. And I'm like, well, there's a million offices between here and there. Like, go find one of those. And it's kind of cool when they drive so far to see me, essentially. And I'm like, you're like, I don't tell them, but I'm like, you're like my third crown. Like, you don't know that I'm a good dentist.
Yeah, never,
you have not seen my dentistry. My hands could shake for all you know. You know, like, you don't know that. So it's been cool. It's been a good experience with that. And I haven't had too much of an issue getting my graduation requirements done, I think, even though in the scarcity mindset of the pandemic, because I have patients that believe in me, too. And so I think that's important.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to kind of dump this on its head a little bit, because you mentioned DSOs, the only ones that are reaching out. I don't deal with much with DSOs, but how does your average general dentist that has a great practice, would be a great mentor with time and you know, a little bit of effort, because a lot of times they're not ready to take an associate on, but I think with a little bit of coaching, it could be a good fit, because I always struggle when you see two different personalities. You like, that kid's good and this doctor's good. If they could just come to a business arrangement, it would be spectacular. But how does that guy sitting there, what would he have to do to reach out to you or your peers that he doesn't have a full-time headhunter out looking? So, I mean, that's where the DSOs are kind of coming along. But they're not the best option, I think, sometimes for your long-term success. If you want to make $175,000 a year, great, go do it. But it just isn't going to get you where you need to be.
You know only what's in front of you. So you know the opportunities that present themselves to you. But there's way more opportunities, 99% of the opportunities that you need to go present yourself to, that don't present themselves to you. And I think that comes across through, like, correct culture fit, because if you are a great mentor, you're going to want a great student as well. And I think that the great students are out there looking for great mentors. And I think that's how I lined up with Dr. Brady was, you know, he spoke to our business and dentistry group just like Dr. Moody did. And he gave us his information and said, you guys are welcome to contact me, free to come shadow. And I heard shadow and I was like, I'm down.
No.
And contacted him, and everyone in my class had the same opportunity. And I'm not saying that it was a business opportunity, it was a learning opportunity. I had no intent of working for this guy, right? I just wanted to learn something and spend a day that I was getting kicked out of clinic because of the pandemic. I was like, I can go spend it in his office and learn something. So everyone had that same opportunity, but it's a matter of seeing the opportunity that's there. So I think it's a combination of both. It's like the student has to find the mentor, and the mentor has to be looking for the student. And I think that those two do align over time, but it's really hard to just cast a net and just throw yourself out to the entire school.
Sometimes the latter doesn't happen until the latter part of their careers, because the mentorship doesn't seem important, you know, and hopefully you know, hopefully dentists, as they work through their path, will see that, like, you know, you probably didn't get there because someone else didn't, like, take the time to help you, you know. But the guy I bought out years ago, gone now, but, like, he provided, like, zero mentorship. Like, he, yeah, it's not true. He taught me one thing about denture adjustments. He taught me that when they had a denture adjustment, that you would take it out of their mouth, the denture out of their mouth, and you would dump it in the bowl of ice water that he created every morning by the lathe, and then you would read the paper for five minutes or so, and then you would grind another piece of just generic acrylic against the wheel to make noise, mm-hmm. and then he would pull the denture out of the ice water and give it back to the patient, and that was his denture adjustments.
What did the ice water do to the acrylic?
It shrank it, which allowed it to have a better fit.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, it would shrink... It would shrink the denture to the point where the patient would be like, yeah, wow, that has a much better fit. And it would be good until they warmed it up, and then it would just fall out again. But, like, that's how he dealt with it. And then he put all the blame on them, and that was that's how he did. Like, that's...
You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, now we just scan them. We would just re-scan and print a new one. It's, like, not a big deal.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, it's a freaking copy, you know?
So I've had a few associates through my ownership, and I've definitely made mistakes, and I've had new grads, and I've had people who have been out for a while. I think the hardest part with the new grads for me was I really didn't want to micromanage, and I didn't want to show my patients that I didn't trust you as a new grad, as a doctor. And so, but then on the flip side is the new doctor felt like she wasn't getting enough mentorship because she really did want her, well, I don't know if she wanted her preps checked. But I think she wanted a lot of feedback. I just didn't want to give that feedback during clinic patient time. And then, of course, everyone's busy when you're done with clinic and patient. So what do you think is the ideal amount of mentorship in the day-to-day? Like, what do you expect when you're coming in? You're a brand-new grad. Like, you have your first crown appointment that you're going to do in an hour and a half. Like, is that terrifying?
An hour and a half to do a crown? Depends. I mean, if you have a rockin' assistant, I don't know. Because here's the thing is when you say an hour and a half, like, I have to count the minutes I'm actually spinning the handpiece, right? Not taking their blood pressure and all these other things that I have to do as a student. Set up my operatory, take their blood pressure, get them numb. Yep. Like, all these other things that come into it. I know, getting them numb, you do that. But that's a hard question because you're saying, like, how much do you want to... Like, that's an individual basis, like, how much you want to mentor them. I think the ideal way is being available. I think being able to answer questions either before or after. And what you're saying about not having time or wanting to go in or have a conversation in front of the patient, because it's easy to do in school. Like, oh, hey... This prep's looking good. Let's make it a little smoother here. Let's do a little that. You do that to another doctor, they'll be like, what the hell? This guy doesn't know what he's doing. You know,
right.
It's expected in school. So, I mean, my personal opinion is slap a mirror in there, grab a picture, do what you got to do. And if at the cementation appointment you say, hey, I think we could do a little bit better with this, you have time to pivot. But I think that you could always take a picture and be like, what would you think? What would you do next time? Because, I mean, they're teeth. You're not going to kill anyone, hopefully. You know, just you can make a crown prep better. All you want to know is how to make it better. And that doesn't have to happen that second. You can just take a picture of it, whatever angle, maybe a question you have, or you just want to look at it. I would take a picture for you. Patient's gone. I would show it to you and say, what do you think? What can I do better? I think that has to be a mutual mentorship in that sense, and it depends what you're looking for. I mean, yeah, you can even, I don't know, scan it, same thing.
Well, that's, yeah, so. Like, I feel like I have a huge advantage with scanners because you can blow up everything 400 mm-hmm. times and then really go through it without the patient being right there. But, yeah, I think there's a balance. Because obviously you want that confidence with patients, but we want to help. Like, I know I want to help dentists and get better.
And I found that with most dentists. Most dentists actually really like an ear to listen to or an ear to listen to them. And they want to teach people. They want to just be able to, like, word vomit their day to somebody about what goes wrong and things like that. Or if something goes awesome, they want to be able to, like, shout that excitement to somebody. So I like being there for those moments because if they figured out something and they're excited about it, I want to know what worked because I love going back to dental school and being like, yo, try this or like watch this, you know, hold my beer.
Now you know how to tighten up a denture. Just throw it in ice cold water.
Exactly.
With some tequila.
I'm gonna scan it and print it.
I mean, that's what I would do, but did they have scanners and printers when you were... Oh, it got really quiet. That was awkward.
Wow. Oh. Wow. You wanna go there?
Yeah, I'm going to just stay out of this one over here. So what's the weather like up there?
So, Gabe, I know whenever I'm looking for somebody, like, I went straight to my team, my rep, And that's like who knew everybody. So do you stay in touch with like the dental schools of who's graduating? Are you part of that?
No, because I am so far away from any dental school.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. That was really
500 one direction. So it's a little trickier up there, but there are some amazing opportunities. It's but again, it's something you got to kind of want to live up there if that's all right with you. And I think it's a great place to live, but that's where I see that there are some crazy opportunities. I've known a handful of people that stumbled into buying some practices for a few hundred grand that were just loaded with opportunity. And within, you know, 6 months or a year, that place is paid for, even though they might have been renting. And now they're building a big clinic. And within 2 years, I mean, they were making crazy money and things were working for them. So those opportunities are still out there. It's just, you know, how do you broaden your search from... Because I do think the closer you are to the dental school, the more competition there is. I mean, there's no two ways around it. You're flooded out a little bit with dentists. You know, get out where we're at. There's a lot of room. And, you know, he had to close down a crazy profitable clinic. But you had to got to live in, you know, really rural Nebraska. But the overhead on that thing was, God, I'll bet you he was lucky. What was the overhead in Rushville? Maybe 40%?
Not even 40%.
So crunch that number. Think about that. Every time you turn a dollar, you put 60 cents in your pocket.
Yeah.
Someone's got him, I'm sure.
Filling up flasks over here now, boy.
Well, I know. They were filling up their flasks, which was awesome. And then I hadn't seen Augie for a while, but I'm relatively positive that...
I think some of your...
Hello.
Okay.
Kids over there were taking him for a little walk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, let's hope.
So, is this your first VOD?
Yes.
And what do you think?
I love it. I love it. I love getting to meet the faces behind all the voices. I mean, it's cool. It also opens you up to other podcasts, other podcasters that are here. I love, it's kind of hard being a newcomer sometimes, like, because you guys all know each other, so it's sometimes hard to introduce yourself into the circles that everyone is so familiar with already. But it's been good. It's been pretty awesome. Getting to meet Mark Costas was actually really cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this meeting is so stuffy and formal. I mean, I don't know how you get past that. It's, I had to, you know. They told me to go, you have to go put a jacket on, please.
Did you see what he did to the Spice Weasel?
Like, I was here for the tail end, not the front end.
He gave the...
Should we talk about what you did to the front end and the tail end? Like, well, I feel like I'm really missing out here.
I don't know
where
my hand went, but... So,
Gabe did that to the poor Spice Weasel.
Aww.
Well, and then the Spice Weasel wore himself a Implants Done Right hat. And then, I don't really know what was going on.
Is this
there,
to get out of babysitting Augie? Like, you are cut off?
No, I'm still okay. But they come up here and tried to tell us that was an otter, and I just had to call
it a Spice Weasel.
What is a Spice Weasel?
You know,
Gabe, what you're going to learn is you got a lot of hard questions to answer.
I do. It just spice and weasel. It looked like a weasel and a spice weasel. I don't know. It just sounded kind of good together. And
I missed that one in biology, the spice weasel. I like it.
Isn't that something that Emerald used to do? Like, bam, get the spice weasel?
Well, he said bam. I don't know what he did with his... With or
wasn't
to a
that
spice
what he was
weasel.
Shaking on things? Was a spice weasel? Isn't that what they?
Not
we're
sure. Right,
the voice is ditch. Sponsoring you a little too much over there.
I'm not sure it's a spice weasel, but we should ask Emerald.
We're definitely digressing.
Either that, or we start selling a spice weasel.
Well, I told him. I said, anytime somebody signs up for the year consult, like, they should get a free weasel.
Does Adam and Eve have a cooking section?
maybe I missed the part. How'd you end up in Oregon after going from Kansas to Oregon?
So I applied to a lot of the West Coast schools, and Oregon was the only one that accepted me. They actually accepted me late, kind of in April, and that was kind of lucky because, like I said, I wasn't a very competitive applicant, and I thought I wasn't getting in for a while. But it turns out that their admissions person was on maternity leave, so she came back, and they were like, holy shit, we got to, like, admit a bunch of students, so they just started like interviewing a bunch of people, and I got in a little late there. And that
I wouldn't have gone in. I couldn't have got in today with the grades I had back then, so I really couldn't have. I had a really good DAT score. You know, I think I had like a 27 or a 28 or something. So
that's
like
pretty damn good.
Yeah, I had a great DAT score, but I only had like a 3.3 or 3.4 on a GPA, which is not overwhelming by any stretch. So, but I think I interview good. So, like, whatever. Like, there's components that you need to. I was telling Brandon Ebert when he was applying for it, I was like, you probably need to get to that 3.7, 3.8 mark, and you need to get, you're at least probably a 22 to a 24 on the DAT, and at least you get an interview, and then it's on you.
Yeah.
Because I still think that if you can interview well, like, they will, I still think people want to have the right people in the industry, you know, and there's plenty of people that I've met that have 4.0s and, big DAT scores, yet they lack the human virtual skills to, you know, the personal skills, the language skills to be an effective dentist. And, you know, that might not, like, this, it's almost time, all right. This is a profession that we need, that you got to have a verbal skill set.
Yeah.
And because we know it's also impossible to be able to definitively tell whether you have good hands or not.
Yeah.
Like, so you can unfold a box in your mind, you know, on the DAT. Like, that's one thing. But, like, you know, they used to have to carve a block of chalk.
I heard about that, yeah.
I was the first class that didn't have to do that. I mean, 25 years ago. So 26 years ago, everyone in the country had to carve a block of chalk. I think it's either soap or chalk, into an, they would put this object out in front of you, and you had to make that block look like this.
Wow.
And it was a big portion of, like, if you had that perceptual skill. So then they called it the
PAT.
Yeah, the PAT. Yeah. Okay. Perceptual aptitude test. And now you have to do it in your mind instead of with your hands. So,
you know, the personal statement was actually the hardest part of the application for me. It's because I'm not a good writer, and I had to have someone help me write it just to make it sound like I was writing something legible. But it was hard for me to articulate why you want to be a dentist, and I always have a hard time with that question because there's so many reasons why, but it's hard to articulate it in such a, like, a moving story where someone's talking about, you know, a relative that passed away, or there a big accident that happened to them, or you know, some heroic story, and mine wasn't a heroic story, so I had a hard time with that one, and I think that was the weakest part of my application. But no one ever really talks about that. It seems to come natural for everyone else. But that was my struggle, was trying to come up with, like, a really compelling story with my personal statement.
Well, I got to bail off because we got to wrap up the VOD. I just got a message from Mark Costas that it's just about wrap-up time. So,
well, nice meeting you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Keep, you're the neighbor.
Yeah, we're close. So keep up with us so that we can track you and talk to you later. Because I want to know more about what we can do to get in front of ASDA and the dental students and stuff, and how we can make a difference in them.
Yeah.
So, and we'll leave that for part two.
Okay.
All right, from VOD.
Cheers.
That concludes another episode of Dentists, Implants, and Worms. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for telling a friend and throwing 5 stars at us on iTunes. Catch you on another episode. And don't forget the fireball. Cheers.